5 years ago, I was paying $65 a month for my subscriptions. Today, those same subscriptions cost $111, and I don't even use half of them anymore. That's why now I use Rocket Money to manage my subscriptions for me. The app gives you a list of all of your subscriptions and reminds you of upcoming payments, so you're not hit with any surprise charges. On top of that, it also sends you alerts when subscription prices go up, so you always know the price you're paying. If you decide you no longer want a subscription, you can cancel it right from the app. No customer service needed. And the best part is, Rocket Money even reaches out and tries to get you refunded for some of the money you lost. On average, people that cancel their subscriptions with Rocket Money save $378 a year. And overall, Rocket Money has saved its members $880 million in canceled subscriptions. Stop wasting money on things you don't use. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. The rush of racing? Nothing beats it. But Chumba Casino comes close. Chumba's got fast spins, fun games, daily bonuses, and all the action you can handle. Now that's a ride. Ready to hit the throttle? Get in the driver's seat and head to ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
This podcast contains graphic descriptions that some listeners may find disturbing. Listener discretion is advised. Now, with that being said, welcome to the Mortal Musings podcast.
Right, let's do this.
The other day at work, Neil decided to go around and show all of our co-workers a picture of the Long Island serial killer.
Yes.
Do you want to explain yourself or will I?
So, me and Megan had privately pointed out that the Long Island serial killer looks exactly the same as someone we work with.
Dead on.
But Megan wanted to keep that to ourselves.
I thought it might be a bit insulting to the man.
So I went round our work with a picture on my phone saying, "Who's that? Who's that?"
They all guessed it.
Yeah.
They all knew.
Because it did. It's his doppelganger.
It really is. Well, I actually have another killer who looks exactly like someone we work with. Now, I'm going to show you a picture.
Okay.
And I want to see if you can guess, because Neil is horrific at comparisons. If you ever want to have a laugh, ask Neil, what celebrity do I look like? And I guarantee it'll be the most batshit crazy comparison you'll ever get.
No, I'm a lot better than you think.
Okay, well, look at this guy.
That's fucking
It's eerie. There's something in the water at our workplace, I'm telling you, that we have two people who look dead on, like fucking sadistic bastards. I'm telling you.
Maybe that's something we could do. Like, you know, so like people in a group or something, in a Facebook group, will try and find criminals who look like him.
Yeah, well, I actually had a thought that we can get Neil to try and cast actors. You know, someone who's already in the public eye. Who would play this killer? And shit like that.
I would be very good at that.
You know, it really gets me because I wish I could show you pictures of these people we work with just so people can actually realise how scary the similarities are. But obviously I'm not going to do that. I wish I could though.
So what are we doing today?
Well, today, Neil, we are going to be taking a look at a few cases of deaths in the wilderness.
What, like survivalists?
No, actually kind of the opposite, because
oh yeah, they die.
They didn't survive, yeah.
So they weren't very good at it.
I mean, I don't even like camping. That's too much for me.
Skeggy. Skeggy's alright. But that's not really camping. They're like
isn't that like caravans?
Static caravans, yeah. That is something I miss from the UK.
Is it?
So for any of you Americans who listen, if you're ever going on vacation to the UK, go to Ingemell's Skegness. You'll love it.
He's setting you up, lads. Don't fucking do it. I've never been, so maybe I can't say. But judging on videos that you have shown me, which the videos are mainly people fighting outside of like a club or a pub or something.
Basically, you're a survivalist in the wilderness.
Pretty much. Right, so our first story today is that of Geraldine Largay. Geraldine was described as a meticulous planner, chatty with an infectious smile, someone who made friends very easily. Geraldine lived in Tennessee and she previously worked as a nurse for the Air Force, but had since retired. And I suppose with all of her free time now since she's retired, she decided to take up the hobby of hiking.
Rambling. Is there a difference?
I don't know. I would always say hiking. But like,
I think rambling's just walking, hiking's up.
Well, I would think of hiking more as like going up a hill, like going up mountains and shit. But hiking is walking.
It's rambling.
Rambling. She loved rambling. So in July of 2013, Geraldine excitedly set off on her hike of the Appalachian Trail.
Appalachian.
I think it's Appalachian. I've heard both pronunciations, but I think Appalachian is the correct one.
I'm fairly certain it's Appalachian.
Okay. She was going to be hiking with a friend of hers, but unfortunately her friend had to leave during the hike to deal with a family emergency.
So go with her.
Yeah, no, she didn't leave with her friend. Geraldine actually decided to continue on without her friend. And a few days later, her husband would arrive to pick her up at a prearranged meeting location.
Mm-hmm.
Now, when the time comes for Geraldine to meet her husband, she doesn't show up. And the next day, he reports her missing. Now, I assume in his mind, it was kind of like, you know, she's hiking on a trail. You're on your own. Maybe she got delayed. Maybe she took her own. You know, she's just, she'll be here tomorrow, should shoot me a message.
Did
whatever.
He know, though, but she was on her own at that point?
I'm actually not sure. I assume, like, if she hadn't, her friend probably would have said,
yeah,
you know, give her a shout, check on her, whatever. So what had actually happened was on the 22nd of July, Geraldine had ventured off the trail because she needed to use the bathroom, and then she couldn't find her way back.
How far did she go to take a shit to the point where she couldn't figure out how to get back to the path?
Well, the thing is, I would have no idea. If I'm going through a few different trees and shit, I don't know where I am. I'd get lost pretty easily.
Leave a drop of breadcrumbs or something like.
Trail of M&Ms.
If you're that bad, leave a trail. If you know, but you, there's a risk of you not. You're on your own, like.
Yeah, but I think some people, I'm just going to the left. And then once they did their business,
yeah,
turn back around, which way is left, right? You know what I mean? Like, you know what I mean? It all looks so similar.
Right. It might sound a lot easier than it is, but I'm fairly certain if I walked off a path into dense grass, I'd get back to that path. I'd know to do a 180 and walk back on myself.
Is there anything you can't do?
Actually saying that, I got lost at Airsoft, didn't I?
You did, so, yeah. And that's a much smaller area.
It's in a forest.
So, with Geraldine reported missing, search parties were sent out, but they had no luck finding her. During this time, Geraldine had set up camp. She tried to start a fire, and she'd made a flag using some branches and an item of her clothing.
See, the fire, yeah, but the flag? No one's going to see. If it's that dense, no one's going to see the flag, but the fire, yeah, get the smoke signals going.
Yeah, I suppose she's doing what she can to have some hope.
She can use the flag to waft the smoke.
She'd also tried to get to higher ground in hopes of getting a signal for her phone. She would then message her husband to let him know that she was lost and needed help. The first text that she sent to her husband was at 11:01 a.m. on the 22nd of July. It read, "In some trouble. Got off trail to go to bathroom. Now lost. Can you call AMC to see if a trail maintainer can help me? Somewhere north of Woods Road. XOX.
To AMC, that's like Mounties sort of thing.
I assume so. The next text she sent to her husband was at 18 minutes past 4 in the afternoon on the 23rd of July. Lost since yesterday. Off trail 3 or 4 miles. Call police for what to do, please. XOX. Like, that's a terrifying. Imagine being off at 3 or 4 miles and you've no idea in what direction at this stage.
So I don't know from that if she'd gone 3 or 4 miles to go to the toilet.
I take it she had gone, you know, however far off to have a little bit of privacy away from anyone else who could be on the trail.
Yeah.
And then walked thinking it was the right direction. Probably tried to turn and go, oh no, this is the direction, and then ended up.
That's what I mean.
Zigzagging off.
I don't know how you'd work it out. How? Because you don't know in what direction you've gone.
Yeah. But this is what I'm saying to you. Like earlier, like, you just leave a trail of breadcrumbs. It's very difficult.
No, but I'm sorry, but if I was going to the toilet off the trail, I would literally be on the other side. Like, so this is where my head's
you
at.
You basically hang your arse off the edge of the trail and just shit into the hedge. Is that what you're saying to me right now?
So what I'm picturing, it's probably not realistic. I'm picturing a dirt path with like hedges either side of it. So you just go on the other side of the edge.
Yeah.
Is that what it is?
No, that's what I'm envisioning as well.
Oh.
But Geraldine wanted a little bit more privacy. She's not just whipping her arse out like you would and squatting down.
I'm not proud.
Now, unfortunately, these messages that she sent to her husband, he never received the text. She never got signal. Yeah. So with that, Geraldine's lost. The search party has already been called off. What is she to do? Geraldine's body wouldn't be found until October 2015 by a forestry worker. She was found in her sleeping bag inside of a collapsed tent. Items found in the tent included a map, a pen and paper, a first aid kit, her phone, a journal, and rosary beads.
Prison beads.
Rosary beads.
Yeah, but I'm saying it to listeners so they know what you're on about.
I think majority of people call them rosary beads.
I used to call them rosemary, as if it was like Saint Rosemary owned these beads. But prison beads, that's what people in UK will call it.
Okay, I've just looked it up. It'll say prison issue rosary beads.
Yeah, the little plastic ones.
Yeah, so they're giving them to prisoners who request them or whatever, but
well, no, they buy them.
It still says rosary beads. You're just an asshole.
It's a bit uncalled for, but... So it took him 2 years to find a body.
Yeah, 2 years.
See, that sounds a long time. She must have been further than 3 or 4 miles away from the trail. That sounds a long time.
Well, I think for Geraldine at that point, she was like, I don't know where I am, what I'm doing. I'm just going to stay put and hopefully someone finds me. Someone will come to me. All her possessions, along with her prison beads, were kept neatly arranged in Ziploc bags.
Oh, that's how she kept them in Ziploc bags.
Yeah, you know, like I said at the start, she's very organised, well planned out. Like, she literally had everything in its own little section.
Well, not that planned out, but...
Geraldine's cause of death would be determined to be starvation and exposure. And she died 3 weeks after the search was abandoned.
Fucking hell.
She was out there for 3 weeks, hoping and praying that someone will hopefully come across her.
See, I don't know what wild animals are out there.
Would there be bears on Appalachian Trail, wouldn't there?
I don't know. So 3 weeks, she's probably looking.
Coyotes?
No, I wouldn't have thought coyotes.
Why not coyotes?
They're more desert, aren't they?
Oh, I don't know.
Like, why are you questioning me? She has to Google any time I say something.
Black bear, white-tailed deer, wild boar, fox, raccoon, beaver, and numerous other small animals.
So there is bears.
So a fucking bear.
Oh, but what, you say a black bear?
Yeah.
Are they not as bad?
I think black bears are worse. That, you know, like compared to a grizzly bear. A grizzly bear would be quicker to fuck off, but a black bear would be quicker to attack a human, I think.
No.
Okay.
No. Grizzly bears probably the worst. Well, other than polar bear.
No, like they're more aggressive. Like they've got more strength and shit, don't they?
Grizzlies.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like they're massive.
Yeah.
But aren't black bears quicker to... Isn't there more cases of black bears attacking? Or is that just because they're more around people?
Yeah, it's usually black bears you'll find in your garden and stuff.
Yeah, that might be where I'm getting it from. This was all for nothing, lads. I'm sorry you wasted your time. We're not around bears. We don't know.
Yeah. So 3 weeks. Jesus.
She'd also wrote on a piece of paper that had been torn from her journal, "When you find my body, please call my husband George and my daughter Carrie. It will be the greatest kindness for them to know that I am dead and where you found me. No matter how many years from now, please find it in your heart to mail the contents of this bag to one of them." And that note was dated from the 6th of August, 2013.
So she doesn't think highly of herself then.
What do you mean?
It'd be the greatest kindness to let him know I'm dead.
No, like it's clearly just, it's my family. They're going to want to have a final answer. I don't think she's saying I'm a sack of shit. They'll be happy to know. The final entry in her journal was dated for the 18th of August, 2013. It was said that when the search parties had been sent out, they were within 100 yards of Geraldine. Yeah.
So
fucking close to getting that help.
How did they not see the smoke?
Well, it must have just been a time when she didn't have the fire going.
Oh yeah, you said tried getting the fire going.
Yeah. Think of how damp it would be there. You know? Yeah. Now, like we said earlier, Geraldine was someone who liked to have a plan, which you're going to need when setting out on a hike like this.
Yeah.
She even prepared for someone to find her body by leaving that note for her family, knowing that she was probably going to die before help arrived. And although Geraldine clearly put in a lot of thought to this trip, she wasn't prepared for a hike of this magnitude on her own. After her friend had left, she would have been in way over her head. Her friend would later say that Geraldine didn't have a great sense of direction and could become flustered easily by mistakenly taking a wrong turn.
Right, so this is what I mean about people doing shit they shouldn't be doing. So even her friend has said she didn't have a good sense of direction.
No.
So what is she doing trying to do this on her own? No. In fact, why is she doing this with her friend?
I think her friend was probably more experienced. And then Geraldine probably had it in her head that, no, I'm going to do this. I want to accomplish this. But obviously she should have bowed out without the experience. She also noted that Geraldine was scared of the dark and did not like being alone. Geraldine suffered from anxiety. Her doctor also told investigators that she was known to suffer from panic attacks if she hadn't taken her medication. Geraldine survived for 26 days before succumbing to starvation.
Fucking hell.
I mean, my heart fucking breaks for her, really, because it's just the idea of being out there on your own to already suffer with anxiety.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? There is actually a picture of Geraldine I'll show you now while she's on the trail. Another hiker actually took the photo of her when they met.
Mm.
And she's just the sweetest looking thing. I'll show you. Hang on. Now look at that woman. Look how excited and happy she is to set out on her hike. Yeah. Like that was taken on that hike.
Fucking hell.
Yeah.
It's like someone's grandma.
Bless her. So next story we're going to look at is that of Carl McCunn. So while Carl's father was serving in the army, he was stationed in Germany, and that's actually where Carl was born. But he was raised in San Antonio, Texas. After he had graduated from high school, he joined the Navy and was discharged after 4 years. So Carl had moved around a bit before eventually settling in Anchorage, Alaska in 1970. Carl was described as being 6'2" in height with big curly reddish-brown hair and was said to have been a very outgoing personality.
Alaska. I wouldn't be that bothered about going.
Well, for Carl, it made sense because he was a wildlife photographer. It was handy for him. In 1976, Carl spent 5 months living the Brooks Range, which is a mountain range that stretches across Alaska into the Yukon Territory of Canada. So he knew the sus. He's experienced this before.
Mm.
In March 1981, Carl arranges again to travel out to the mountain range. So Carl has flown out and dropped off in the middle of fucking nowhere. Knowing it was going to be a long enough trip, he brought plenty of film for his camera. You know, obviously that's why he was there. He also brought food and other essentials, as well as 2 rifles, a shotgun, and plenty of ammunition. That's fucking mad, isn't it, going out there?
Yeah.
Like, it's a completely different fucking situation. Like, having a gun just to protect yourself.
Yeah. But, like, difference between this one and the first one is he's got military training. So he should be able to...
Would he have had that type of training in the Navy, though?
Marines would know. Like... the whereabouts and stuff.
They'd know the sus.
Yeah.
Each of these stories, because we're doing 3 today, they're all slightly different type of situations.
Okay.
Carl was scheduled to return home in August. He had arranged with a friend of his who was a pilot to pick him up from his location. But there was one problem with this plan. Carl had forgotten to confirm these plans with his friend. His friend had... Yeah. His friend had also said that he didn't want him to be counting on him. He didn't know if he was absolutely positive he'd be around to assist him in his return.
Yeah.
So, basically, it was just...
Never picked him up?
Yeah.
Yeah, but at some point you must think, wait, I haven't heard from him.
Well, we'll get into it of how this kind of happened. It seems so bizarre. But I mean, he'd obviously asked his friend about this, but he hadn't followed up with a date.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Always follow up.
Always. Now, Carl had actually arrived in the location by air taxi, and he had told the pilot of that air taxi that his friend was going to collect him.
Yeah.
So they weren't even on the radar. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
He also didn't have enough money to arrange to get a trip back with the air taxi. Now, in early August, the weather was starting to get colder and damper, and he's running out of supplies. This is when Carl begins hunting to try and stretch out what little supplies he had left.
Yeah.
He hunted mainly ducks and muskrats. I don't know what that is.
Muskrat?
Yeah. I think it's kind of like a little beaver or something. Like a one of those type. Remember when I read that about the animals on the Appalachian Trail and said like other small animals?
Yeah.
It's one of them. Now, at this point, it's starting to get a little bit desperate. You know, he's kind of like, oh, what do I do here? A state trooper flew over. And although Carl did try to get his attention, the pilot didn't think there was an issue. He said that when he'd flown over afterwards, did his loop round, he saw Carl casually walking back to his tent and that he didn't appear to be in distress. Now, Carl kept a diary detailing his time here. He wrote about his attempt to catch the attention of the state trooper, so we know what his perspective was. He said, "Unfortunately, it was on wheels and couldn't land, so I stopped waving after its first pass. I then got busy packing things up and ready to break camp." So he thought, oh, they can't land right now, but they're going to send someone back around. So he was casually walking back to start getting ready to go.
Fucking hell.
After realising they weren't coming back, he wrote, "I recall raising my right hand, shoulder high, and shaking my fist at the plane's second pass. It was a little cheer, like when your team scored a touchdown or something. Turns out that's the signal for all okay, do not wait. It's certainly my fault I'm here. Man, I can't believe it. I really feel like a klutz. Now I know why nobody's shown up from that incident."
Fucking hell.
So that was in late August, when you're already like, fuck me.
Yeah.
I need some help. I've just fucked up an opportunity. By November, Carl's still out there, but he's run out of food. And his health is seriously taking a hit.
See, this is what I'm saying about, so that's August to November. How has his friend not thought, well, he didn't confirm but he wanted me to pick him up, but I haven't heard anything from him or seen him around.
Well, again, we'll get into that.
Ah.
So at this stage, his hands are now affected by frostbite. So he's struggling to even set the traps to catch food.
Yeah.
It's really fucking dire at this point. He also begins having dizzy spells. He considered making the trek to Fort Yukon, but that was about 75 miles away and he's grown weaker. There's no way.
75?
Exactly. There's no way he could have. In Carl's last diary entry, he wrote, "They say it doesn't hurt. If my body has been eaten on, or if it turns out I take my own life, just put me under a tree so I can at least make a decent meal for some critter. I don't want my family to see me that way. They'll be hurt enough as it is. Should I crazily attempt walking out in my condition and I'm nowhere to be found, please carry out the above will. I kindly thank whoever may do so. The ID attached is me." He also wrote, "Dear God in heaven, please forgive me my weakness and my sins. Please look over my family." He left instructions for whoever was to find him. He asked for his film to be developed and his belongings to be given to his father, and for the person who finds him to take his rifle for their trouble. Now, as you were saying earlier, why is no one kind of worried about him? Why, you know, someone like, well, what's going on? By mid-January, his family and friends were starting to worry. But the reason it took them so long to report it to authorities was because Carl had already told them that he might extend his stay. So they weren't like, oh my God, he's not back on the 25th. You know what I mean? They were like, we'll see him when we see him. And Carl's father hadn't called the police because on a previous trip, Carl had been late coming home. So his father called the police and Carl had said, please don't do that again. You know, I don't have a set schedule.
Yeah, yeah.
So they've already been told, let it go, relax.
Yeah.
You know?
I don't know. I think if it got to a month over, you'd be like, okay, I've thrown that in.
On the 2nd of February, 1982, state troopers went to check up on Carl. And like I just said, they reported in mid-January. The reason for the gap between mid and the start of February was because the weather was that bad, they weren't able to fly over.
Okay.
So they get to his campsite, they approach his tent, and they cut open his tent to find his body, frozen and emaciated.
What's that?
Like, wasted away.
Okay. Decomp.
No, like, because he hadn't eaten or anything. He was...
Oh, okay.
Carl had made the decision to take his life. He had shot himself with his rifle. An entry in his diary from August read, "I think I should have used more foresight about arranging my departure. I'll find out soon." After his death, his father said, "If anything comes of his death, it will be to caution other people not to get in the same circumstances. If only we can take one person from going through what that kid went through." His father has also said that if he were to publish his son's diary, he would use the proceeds towards establishing a search and rescue team. It's a tough one.
Yeah.
This one, you know, through reading his diary, you kind of get a bit of a sense of who Carl was, and you almost feel like you know him. You're kind of reading his private thoughts, and to me, he seems very likable.
Likable, but fucking ditzy. Like,
yeah.
At first, I wanted to blame the friends, but yeah, he didn't confirm it. Why did he go off?
He makes the point of writing himself, "It's certainly my fault, I'm here now."
Yeah.
It's so, like, how often in your day-to-day life do you forget things and you're kind of just like, ugh.
Yeah.
You're like, oh, I should have made that appointment. And then you've got the added shit on top of it of, he might extend his stay.
Yeah.
Or he's done this before, where he said, "Don't panic if I'm not back." So it was the perfect storm. You know what I mean?
Mm.
But yeah, like I said, you're kind of getting an insight to who he is, and an insight at the most extremely challenging time.
Yeah.
That pretty much none of us can understand. You know what I mean? Pour one out for Carl.
But why don't you want to pour one out for Geraldine?
Pour one out for Geraldine as well. So our final story is that of Chris McCandless. Have you heard of him? It's a fairly well-known story.
The name don't ring any bells.
Chris McCandless was an adventurer. He was described as someone who longed for a life that wasn't weighted down by expectations or materialism. He leaned into a more nomadic lifestyle. This could possibly be because of some accusations his sister has made.
Oh?
Not against him.
Oh.
Ooh. His younger sister accused their parents of verbal and physical abuse. And it's believed that that was a big factor to push Chris towards wanting to retreat from the life he had known.
Yeah.
Although his parents deny this claim and have described her accounts as fictionalized and have said that it has nothing to do with Chris following his dreams. Something else that is said to have been a bit of a driving force in his decision was that his father had actually been married previously and had kids before meeting his mother. And his father was still married when he and his sister were born.
Oh.
Mm. It was said that he felt as though he had been lied to, that his life wasn't what it really seemed.
Mm.
In 1986, after graduating from high school, Chris set off travelling for the summer and would arrive back just in time to start college. And it was said that he fucking loved it. That's where
college.
He kind of... No, travelling.
Oh.
He did excel. He was brilliant academically. It just wasn't what he wanted out of life.
Yeah.
He loved just kind of being out there doing your own thing.
Yeah.
He knew what he wanted to do with his life, and that was to live out the more simplistic, yet harsh in many other ways, type of life.
Yeah.
In 1990, Chris graduated, gave away his possessions, donated all of his money, and took off cross country. Now, after his car, which already wasn't in good shape, broke down, he continued on foot. He would hitchhike, ride trains, and by canoe, he travelled on the Colorado River into Mexico. And to support himself when he did need a bit of money, he would pick up a job here and there. One of the jobs he picked up was that of an operator of a grain elevator. He left that job abruptly, leaving a note for his supervisor that read, "Tramping is too easy with all this money. My days were more exciting when I was penniless and had to forage around for my next meal. I've decided that I'm going to live this life for some time to come." So I left that note for a supervisor and just fucked off. All right, Chris. By April 1992, Chris reached Fairbanks, Alaska. Chris had planned to travel across the Teklanica River, but due to heavy rainfall and other factors that would have made the journey too treacherous, Chris decided to take shelter in an abandoned bus that he had found, number 142. Do you know, I couldn't help but... laugh when writing the bit about the journey across the river, the two treacherous. Do you know what immediately came to my mind?
What?
Treacherous journey. What comes to your mind?
I don't know.
RTE footage. Do you remember when there was the storms and everything?
Oh, yeah.
Lads, if you haven't seen it,
and the stop sign hits you one in the head.
Well, that was like the edited one, but yeah. I remember Snoop Dogg shared that. If you haven't seen it already, look up, I don't know, RTE storm treacherous journey or something. Don't make unnecessary journeys. I think she said that.
Yeah.
Oh, it was fucking brilliant.
She stood there getting slapped in the face with rain.
Yeah. Literally holding her hood like, oh, it's fucking brilliant. So he's made it to Alaska, but his plans have been halted. So he's now sheltering in the bus.
Mm.
On the 6th of September, 1992, passing hunters found the decomposed, emaciated body of Chris. He was found wrapped in a sleeping bag on the bus. He had been dead for 19 days. Chris was just 24 years old.
Fucking hell.
Now, Chris's cause of death is very debated.
Oh?
It was said to have been starvation or poisoning. On the 30th of July, Chris wrote in his diary, "Extremely weak, fault of potato seed. Much trouble just to stand, starving, great jeopardy." So this is where the poisoning theory comes into play.
Yeah.
Now,
from a what, a tater seed?
Yeah, potato seed. I'm not going to get into the science behind all this because we'll be here all day and frankly, I'm not very bright. But basically, the seeds were tested and they said they found no toxins.
So starvation, then he weren't eating enough.
Well, hold on there, Neil. Further testing was done on a different scale. This time they looked at the toxic amino acids rather than the toxic alkaloid component of it.
Oh, obviously.
Clearly. I'm sorry if there's anyone here who knows anything about chemistry, because I'm sure you're like screaming right now, but sorry. Sorry for the shit show. To sum up, it's most likely that Chris did poison himself and as a result became too ill to hunt or forage, causing him to starve to death.
Yeah.
That's kind of the most likely outcome. Because I went down a fucking rabbit hole with this, lads. There was so much information on it.
Yeah, because when I told you about my dad ate him raw, you said that can make you ill.
This is a different thing.
Oh.
It's not. But no, you shouldn't just eat a potato as it is with the uncooked starch and all that. It's not great.
He doesn't sit there eating a potato. What he does...
He bites into it like an apple.
No, he... when he's cutting up spuds to make chips, fries, to our Americans, he'll eat one or two of them.
Why? It wouldn't taste good.
He likes it. I don't know why.
Like, I don't think it's going to kill you, but I'm pretty sure the starch can upset your stomach because it's not broken down. It's not cooked. Do you get what I mean? But he's doing great.
I've never met anyone else who eats raw spuds.
No. Now, at the time of his death, Chris weighed just 67 pounds.
Fucking hell. 24 as well. That's no age.
So, you know, I said to you earlier, it's like a pretty well-known case. His story is very well-known.
Hmm.
And what's drawn so much attention to the story is how divided people are on Chris's story. Some look at Chris as someone to admire. He was someone who was inspirational to them.
Mm.
He just fucked off, left all the materialism behind and lived his life.
Yeah.
Others, not so much. They look at Chris as someone who was self-destructive and ill-prepared.
See, to do with the material thing, we could all take a step back.
Yes.
Telly? I couldn't walk away from telly.
TV is one of the greatest inventions that's ever been made.
Well, it's not like TV.
What do you mean it's not?
TV, I would put in the same category as internet. It's completely ruined civilization.
Yeah. But I love it though. But I think entertainment is very important.
Yeah, but what did we do before? You'd go and watch a puppet show or a pantomime or, like, you'd go to the cinema, you'd go...
Yeah, but you got to leave the house then, Neil. I've just told you, I don't like camping and I don't like going out. I like my comfort. Puppet show? You're scared of puppets.
Dolls.
But yeah, no, the other side of the argument was he was self-destructive and ill-prepared. He just sort of went out there to discover the land for himself. He didn't have a decent map, he had hardly any food, and he didn't have sufficient protection against bears, nor was it going to be much good for hunting larger animals.
Yeah.
Now, the bust where he had died has since been moved to a museum. But before that, people would travel there to visit the site. They would camp there, leave messages. Some would even not eat, as I assume to be some kind of dedication to him.
Yeah, to try and get the feel.
Almost like a pseudo-religious type of thing going on. And there have been multiple deaths because of people trying to make the trek to the site of Chris's death.
What?
Yeah, because you're travelling out into the wilderness. A lot of people just aren't fucking prepared to do that. As we've seen in some of these stories. Like, I don't think people realise just how fucking insane it is unless you are prepared.
Yeah.
Regardless of whether you admire Chris and his story or look at him as someone who hadn't a fucking notion of what he was at, I think it's important not to romanticise his story. Looking at it from the most positive standpoint of him just wanting quote-unquote freedom, there were still things in his life that surely pushed him to reach a point of wanting total isolation.
Yeah, it's like out of the three cases you've just told me, it's not that I have more or less respect for each one, but I can understand this one more. Like I can understand the mindset of, you hear about it all the time where people are like, I've had enough of people.
Yeah.
Like they do. Like there was a guy I saw, he turned his van into like an apartment. He'd got internet. He was working from there. He was he was getting his own drinking water. He was growing his own food and he loved it. Like he was off the grid and he loved it. That I can understand, but he wasn't prepared.
No. So Chris described himself as an extremist, an aesthetic voyager whose home is the road, and who now faced a climactic battle to kill the false being within and victoriously conclude the spiritual revolution.
That's deep.
That's full on.
That's a bit
That's
deep.
A lot, yeah. But from that quote from him, it's facing some inner demons and wanting to get away and whatever you can take from that, I think. And you have to remember, he was only 24.
Yeah.
He was still very young, you know? And like we said earlier, he excelled academically. It just wasn't the life he wanted, you know? So that's the sus with Chris McCandless. And if you're interested in his story, I highly recommend looking further into it. There's so much in this story. I've barely scratched the surface, you know? There's also a book and a movie about his story, and it's called Into the Wild, if you're interested.
Who stars in it?
I can't remember the guy who plays him, but I know Sean Penn directed it, I'm pretty sure.
Oh.
I know, I'm pretty sure. I'm 87% sure Sean Penn directed it.
See, this is where I'm at. I'm probably going to get some hate for it, but I really don't see... Like, I'm not saying no one should be doing it. This is me. I don't see the point of doing it. Like, you've got 4K, 8K, where you can watch someone who's flown a drone through these places, and for the fact of how dangerous it is, just to see it.
There's fucking bears out there, lads.
Yeah.
You don't need to do it.
I think there'd be more people who agree with me than disagree.
Well, that's why I picked those three stories, because they all kind of have the same conclusion. But the first one with Geraldine, she was someone who's been ill-prepared, and it's just very sad. She got off the track and ended up dying. With Carl, he's been there before. And, you know, it was part of his career to go out and photograph these things. He just didn't plan it correctly.
Yeah.
And then with Chris, he deliberately went out into the middle of fucking nowhere because that's what he wanted. And unfortunately, you know, passed away as well. But, like, I have to say, there's something about Carl I just really liked. As much as you want to, like, go, Jesus, Carl, you need to plan better. It's how he's writing his diary. You know, I'd love to read through the whole thing. How he writes is just really kind of like, there's no one to blame but me.
Yeah.
I fucked up. I made a mistake. You know?
Yeah.
But there you go. Three different
cases. I think Geraldine should have gone with a friend. I think Carl should have confirmed pickup.
Yeah.
With Chris.
You more look at him as positive, do you?
No, not.
You think he was ill-prepared, but you understand his feelings. Yeah. Yeah, I think I feel kind of the same.
So, Oddity.
Oddity.
Let's finish strong.
The Crusader.
Oh.
So.
Now this sounds a bit of me.
In the crypts of St. Michael's Church in Dublin lays the remains of John and Henry Shear, who were members of the Society of the United Irishmen who were hanged, drawn and quartered by the British during the Irish...
Like, I thought this was going to be about us Brits. Like,
no, we're not going there. Hang on. So, in the crypts of St. Michael's Church in Dublin lays the remains of John and Henry Shear, who were members of the Society of the United Irishmen, and they were hanged, drawn and quartered by the British during the Irish Rebellion of 1798. It's got a bit awkward in here, hasn't it?
Just a tad.
There's also Robert Emmet, another Irish rebel who was executed by the British in 1803.
Rebel?
Yeah.
So he was a bad guy?
No, freedom fighters.
Oh.
We were going against the British. But what? What are you laughing at?
The way you just looked at me. We need to start doing video podcasts for fuck's sake. Do you know what? Right. Just to describe how she just looked at me after saying fighting against the British. If you can remember on Friends when Ross is about to be a lecturer and they're like, is the naked women on that card? You need to make eye contact. And he'll read a certain line and then
yeah.
That's how you just shot a look at me.
You sounded so hopeful when I first said the Crusader.
Yeah. And just to clarify, I was born in 89, for fuck's sake.
I didn't have a go at you. I just made the point. Yeah, so like I said, Robert Emmet, another Irish rebel, but apparently others also claim to have his remains. So I don't actually know what the source is.
Was it bits or?
Well, I think maybe people want to have it. Okay. So it's like, we have it. Now, the crypt also holds the 800-year-old mummified remains of a fella known as the Crusader. The Crusader was a big lad. At 6'4" in height, he was very tall for back then. The average height then would have been about 5'7".
Oh, so even I'm...
So he was huge, this okay. lad. So, with him being a bit above the average height, in order to fit his body into his coffin, his legs were broke and folded underneath his body.
Yeah. They couldn't make a bigger coffin.
Yeah, well, they couldn't be arsed. Just fold them up, lads, great. Shove them in there. So, something else interesting about this church, I thought that included this specifically for you.
Uh-huh.
The original structure of this church had been built in 1095, and it was used to help the last of the Vikings in Ireland after the others had been either killed or fucked off.
I like my Vikings.
I know, I thought you'd enjoy that little tidbit. So that's a little bit about the crypt and all that. You know, that's interesting.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it'd be pretty cool to go and visit that and see the remains.
Can we?
I think. It's now closed, and I'll tell you for what. In June of this year, some little shithead lit a fire in the crypt.
What?
Yeah. Now, the fire itself didn't cause much damage, but obviously the fire brigade had to be called and extinguish the fire, and it left the crypt filled with about a foot of water.
Fucking hell.
And caused the destruction of 5 of the mummies. Which, that's just fucking shit, isn't it? It's yeah. like, that's fucking history. We want to see this shit.
Yeah.
You know? Now, also back in 2019, another little shite-hawk broke into the crypt and decapitated the Crusader. The man who decapitated him was jailed on charges of criminal damage, including damaging a dead body.
And treason.
Treason. But can't the Crusader catch a break at this stage? He's 800 years old. Can't we leave it be?
Yeah.
But, I mean, don't you think that's devastating?
Yeah.
An 800-year-old mummy.
Nothing will surprise me anymore what these gobshites will do.
This was kind of a weird oddity. I came across the article about the destruction of the mummies.
Yeah.
It sounds like, oh, let me kind of like look at the Crusader. But yeah, I thought that was a couple interesting bits in it.
Well, thank you for telling me about it after it's closed.
Yeah, you've no hope of going out. Place is fucked. Thanks, lads. Thank you so much for listening. Find us on Patreon, TikTok, Facebook, and Instagram. If you have a case suggestion, or maybe even your own story, email us at mortalmusingspodcast@gmail.com.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. The rush of racing? Nothing beats it. But Chumba Casino comes close. Chumba's got fast spins, fun games, daily bonuses, and all the action you can handle. Now that's a ride. Ready to hit the throttle? Get in the driver's seat and head to ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.